Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me, Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we love our listeners. Thank you so much for downloading our podcast. We're up to something like 115,000 people who are listening to our podcast. And, of course, we love to be part of Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And put that in your easy-to-get-to access links, because at PRN, you can listen to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z or any of the other fantastic shows that are here. Today, we have as our guest Dr. Carrie Zizga, and I'll ask her to help us with her last name, but we'll call her Dr. Carrie for the show. And Dr. Carrie is known as the functional medicine doc, the go-to expert on finding the root causes of health problems so that you can feel normal again. And in fact, that is the name of her book, Reclaim Your Energy and Feel Normal Again, Fixing the Root Cause of Your Fatigue with Natural Treatments. Dr. Carrie has a home study course called Entrepreneurial Fatigue, How to Fuel Your Brain and Body for Entrepreneurial Success. And she is both a naturopath as well as a chiropractor. So we're very happy to bring on board as our guest today, Dr. Carrie. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Ellen. Thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor to be interviewed by you.
Now, I know that you're coming to us today from Canada, and that's where you're located.
Yeah, I'm actually born and raised in Chicago, but I met my husband in chiropractic school, and so I've been living in Canada now for 19 years in the capital city of Ottawa.
Well, you know, that's really interesting. I live in Florida, and we have many, many Canadian nationals who come and spend the winter with us. So it's kind of the reverse, and then they go back right around now because they have to be in Canada for about 6 months.
That's right.
Let me ask you, since I'm interested in your opinion as a natural health care provider and a natural health care specialist, since you're both a naturopathic doctor and a chiropractor, how is the medical system in Canada? Is it supportive of natural health care providers?
I would say that the health care system is very similar to in the U.S. in that a lot of medical doctors don't really know what alternative medicine is. They don't really know what naturopaths do. A lot of them don't even know what chiropractors really do. And so I think simply because they just don't know, that they're afraid of it and they generally don't recommend it. And so the hope is that with shows like yours and with the internet and publishing books and whatnot, there's a ton of research out there on natural medicine that slowly more and more medical doctors will understand the significance that natural medicine can have on a patient's health.
Yes, and of course, in natural medicine, that is what we're focused on, is patients' health. But it seems like in terms of medical practice, certainly in the United States, it seems to be linked sometimes much more to all kinds of financial limitations rather than a focus on people's health. So I know in Canada you have a national health care system. That's why all the Canadian neighbors of mine rush home on April, because they cannot be out of the country more than 6 months or they lose something, access to the national health care system. Does that cover naturopaths and chiropractors?
No, actually, that's a great question, and this is a question that I get a lot from U.S. Residents. So in Canada, our national system of health care basically covers any kind of a visit to a medical doctor. So if you need to see a family doctor for a checkup, if you need to go to the emergency room, anytime you need to see a medical doctor, that would be covered under the system. But anything above and beyond that, whether it's chiropractic or naturopathic medicine, if it's seeing a dentist or an eye doctor or physical therapist, massage therapist, none of that is covered by the government health system, and most of the time people have to pay out of their pocket for that.
Okay, so which is the same as here?
It's basically the same, yeah.
Right, because mostly some chiropractors sometimes can get into some coverage networks. Naturopaths depends on the state, as I'm sure you know, that in the United States, naturopathic medicine is not even recognized as a medical profession in most of the states of the country.
That's right, and we're very fortunate in Canada that naturopaths are widely recognized across the majority of Canadian provinces as being doctors and a regulated profession.
Right, and there's also naturopathic schools in Canada.
That's right, yeah.
And I know some naturopaths who do function in the United States actually attended those schools, because I'm very involved with Bastyr University and also Southwest University of Naturopathic Medicine in Arizona. And I've taught in both of those venues.
Those are two fantastic
schools.
Yeah,
and the
schools.
University of Bridgeport, which is the newest school in the United States. So it's not that different. So people who are interested in feeling well and getting to the root cause of their health issue are very fortunate if they, you know, seek you out and come and see you.
Thank you.
And you've been doing this a long time because your private practice has been in place since 1996.
That's right. Yeah, I originally started in practice as a chiropractor. And then within about 5 years, I was kind of becoming bored with seeing back pain and headaches. And I wanted to do more to help my patients. And so I started slowly learning about nutrition and homeopathy, detoxification, food sensitivities and whatnot. And I came across functional medicine, and I just fell in love with the principles of functional medicine, which are basically, in a nutshell, find the cause, fix the cause, and feel normal again. So find the cause is about investigating what is the root underlying cause of the health problem, and then fixing it with natural treatments. So that could be diet changes, it could be stress management, it could be using specific vitamins or herbs, it could be doing exercise, acupuncture, lots of different ways that natural medicine can help balance the body. But that's the key to it, Ellen, and I know that you already know this, and a lot of your listeners already know this, that if you can really find the cause and fix it, that you're actually getting the body to a whole new level of health. And that functional medicine is definitely not Band-Aid medicine, that if we can get the body to a whole new level of health, that we have really made a tremendous change to the body and to that person's health. And so that's why I love functional medicine.
Yes, and you do a great job in your book, Feel Normal Again, Fixing the Root Cause of Your Fatigue with Natural Treatments. And for instance, we're looking at the fact that you would really look at testing differently than a conventional physician. So let's just talk about thyroid testing, like you talk about on page 16 in your book, how your approach is so much more in-depth.
Oh, that's a great question. So I guess if I just take a step back, what I often find as a pretty commonly when new patients come to see me, a common story that I hear is, you know, I've been tired for a long time. I've gone to see my family doctor. They ran some tests, and everything came back as normal. So the doctor thinks either, one, I should take a vacation, or two, I'm starting a burnout, so I need to take 3 months off of work, or number three, I should start on an antidepressant. So that's a very common theme that I hear if the doctor can't
really
find. I
just have to say, when I hear it, I think I hear that third one kind of on top of the list. Like they'll just, you know, usually it's a go-to drug thing right away. So
Yeah. And so patients, they want to know why they have fatigue. They don't want a Band-Aid. They don't want to be drugged up. And they don't want to be told, like, oh, just take some time off. Like basically it's all in your head is kind of like what they're saying. They want answers. And so in my office, what I'll do is I'll do extensive testing to try and find the answers. And oftentimes a family doctor will already do some blood work and test for anemia and thyroid problems, and those are at the top of the list for fatigue and should always be checked first. But the problem, Ellen, and I'm sure you know some of this, and as you said, I talk about it in my book, that checking for thyroid problems from a medical perspective usually only involves running a TSH test, which is a very general screening test for thyroid health. Oftentimes that test comes back as normal, you know, within the normal limits. And so the doctor just automatically says, like, your thyroid is fine, but there can be problems with your thyroid even if you have a normal TSH test. So if you're a listener out there and you're having all of the typical common symptoms of a low thyroid, which would be things like, number one, feeling tired, having a foggy brain, feeling cold, even if it's warm outside, cold hands and cold feet, dry skin, thinning hair. And this is a really big one. The outer third of your eyebrows is starting to just fade away.
Well, that's a great one people can check on their own.
Yeah, that's a very classic sign that there is something going on with your thyroid. So the best way to really check all the levels of the thyroid function is to start with a TSH test, but then also to check free T4 and free T3 and reverse T3, and then to check for the antibodies, because most of the time people that have thyroid problems actually have Hashimoto's.
Well, let's back up a little bit, Dr. Carey, because, of course, you know what TSH is, and I do, but let's define what that word is and where that hormone originates.
Absolutely. So TSH stands for thyroid stimulating hormone. And again, this is the general kind of a screening test that most medical professionals will use to assess thyroid function. So TSH is the hormone that's made in the pituitary gland, which is inside your brain. The job of the pituitary is kind of like the conductor of the orchestra of hormones in your body. And so your pituitary talks to your thyroid by using TSH. And so I like to explain this to patients that, so you could be at work, and let's say the boss is telling the employee that, hey, I need you to make T4, which is thyroid hormone. I need you to make T4, and I need 200 units of it, and I need it by 3 o'clock today. Well, it's not often that the thyroid or the employee necessarily is on top of their work. And so just measuring a TSH doesn't give us the full scope of what's going on with the rest of the cascade. So the TSH is just the first part where the pituitary is talking to the thyroid. So it would be like the boss is talking to the employee.
Right. It's not really a thyroid hormone. It's actually a pituitary hormone. A lot of people don't realize that.
Exactly. So then the next step is the thyroid makes T4. And so that's why you want to make sure your free T4 gets checked. Again, free T4.
The difference between free, like why are you using that word, F-R-E-E, free T4 that people should request?
So
what was the other one?
So there's total T4. And then there's free T4. So free T4 is actually measuring the active amount of T4, the active amount of that hormone floating around in your body. So in your body, hormones are floating around either free or they're bound to a protein. So they're kind of bound to a protein, and that protein, its job is to bring it through the body to all of the different areas of the body. But when that hormone is bound to the protein, it's kind of like a ball and chain, and it's inactivated. It does not work. So we don't want to know necessarily how much is there that's not working. We want to know how much is there that is working, that's active. If we could have the pick of the litter, we would do both tests, free T4 and total T4.
Yeah, that's excellent. And, of course, your body does make T4, but that's not the most active thyroid hormone. The one that actually seems to be more active on site in different areas of the body is actually T3.
Exactly. So to recap, we've got the pituitary, and it sends out TSH to talk to the thyroid, and then the thyroid next responds by making T4. And then in your body, that T4, which doesn't do very much, that T4 needs to be converted into T3, and T3 is actually the most active thyroid hormone in the body. So you can see that there's all these different steps, and just measuring TSH only shows us a small piece of the puzzle. So it's good to have your T3 tested. Free T3 would be the best way, because that will show you the most amounts of the active T3 hormone. And like I said, it's the T3 hormone that's where really the rubber hits the road. That's where we actually see the chemistry reacting in your body, and how your body reacts to those thyroid hormones is with the T3. So to test that, you would ask for free T3. You could also ask for total T3. And then sometimes in the body, there's this other form of T3 called reverse T3, which I like to test for also. So free T3 is the most active form of T3, so we want to make sure we've got a lot of that in circulation. And then reverse T3 is the opposite. It's like kind of like a garbage form of thyroid hormone that is totally inactive, and we want to make sure that reverse T3 is as low as we can have it.
And that's interesting, because it probably tricks the body in terms of being able to fit into receptor sites, but then it doesn't take any action, so you're going to feel very tired.
Exactly. And so this, Ellen, this is where people have all the classical symptoms of a low thyroid, and I'll see that their free T3 is on the low side, their reverse T3 is on the high side, but because both of them are still within normal limits, ultimately the TSH still looks normal.
And this is a very big deal in people who are feeling fatigue. So
absolutely.
Often, as a natural healthcare provider and an integrative healthcare provider like you are, you can dig down and find the reason. And I've seen people cry when you go, yes, there is a problem, when they've been told, no, there's no problem, it's all in your head, for years.
Exactly. I just had a patient in last week. Ellen, she can basically only eat 4 foods in her diet because she has so many food sensitivities, and she's completely fatigued. She has such terrible foggy brain. She's basically, you know, she's afraid that she's going to lose her job because her memory just, it's terrible. And she's wanting answers. And so she came to see me, and I was diving deep into her thyroid, and I found out that she actually has Hashimoto's, which means her body is attacking her thyroid. So Hashimoto's is an autoimmune form of a thyroid problem. So just me giving her an answer, she was crying tears of joy because now she finally has an answer. And once we know where the problem is, that means now we can map out a plan to try and fix it.
Well, another thing that you have in your book, which I completely agree with and even teach whole classes to consumers on, you say whenever you get any testing done, make sure to get a copy for your own records so that you can see what your numbers are. Because what happens is very often people will be heading in a direction of too high or too low years before they fall off the cliff. And that is such a good time to intervene, but you'll never know it because the doctors, usually conventional physicians, will just say everything's normal when everything is just about to be not normal. And you could determine that by yourself by looking at your numbers and seeing from one year to another which way it's going.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people, they don't realize that those records, they are legally your records, and you're entitled to get a copy of your records at any point. So don't be shy about it. Don't be afraid. Just ask. And get
the best
a copy.
Time to ask, really, the best time to ask is when, let's say the doctor orders the test, when you go to get the results, because you can usually get them then, actually a paper copy or an electronic copy for free. But if you wait and want one that was done 6 months ago or a year ago, it seems like, at least here in the U.S., they can legally charge you a fee for getting your own records, and they call that an administrative fee.
Yeah, that's happening more and more in Canada as well. So anytime you have a test done, ask for a copy right there and then, and start compiling everything into a binder. And just start paying attention because, like you said, Ellen, you can start seeing trends of things going too low or trending as far as going too high. And unfortunately, in the medical profession, they're kind of constrained because until you are clinically abnormal, until your blood results are abnormal, technically, most of the time they can't really do much. until you are sick. So this is where naturopath and natural medicine really shines, because we are focused more on helping you before you get sick and more with preventative medicine too. So some of it is just simply because the doctors are constrained within their own profession.
That's true. And you talk about Hashimoto's, which you were just discussing. In conventional medicine, they don't recognize that it's as common as it is.
Yeah, so Hashimoto's is the number one reason why people have hypothyroidism or a low thyroid. And like I said earlier, Hashimoto's, it's basically an autoimmune problem where your body is attacking your thyroid and slowly destroying it. And unfortunately, the medical profession most of the time they don't bother testing to even see if you have Hashimoto's. Because from a medical perspective, the treatment of low thyroid is just simply put you on Synthroid or some other kind of a thyroid medication and just keep you on that for the rest of your life. And as your thyroid gets worse and worse, they'll just keep giving you stronger and stronger doses. Whereas in natural medicine, there's a lot that we can do with Hashimoto's that if we can get your immune system to behave normally again, which is our goal with Hashimoto's patients, to get the immune system to behave normally again, to stop the attack on the thyroid, that we can ultimately preserve thyroid function in that way. So from a natural medicine standpoint, the treatment for Hashimoto's is vastly different from a medical standpoint.
Yeah, and so what would be your recommendation then? Because once you discover Hashimoto's, you might institute a different protocol than if someone just had, let's say, low one of the other hormones that were low.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I will always run all of those tests that I mentioned earlier, plus I'll do the antibody testing. So that's really the key to see if this patient has Hashimoto's or not. So if I'm veering off to the right or if I'm veering off to the left, in the fork in the road. So testing for Hashimoto's, there's basically two blood tests. They're both antibodies. So the first is called TPO, or thyroperoxidase antibodies, and then the other one is TG, or thyroglobulin antibodies. And if either of those two tests come back as abnormal, and sometimes both come back as abnormal, that means you have Hashimoto's. And one of the biggest things to help with getting the immune system to play normally with your body is to address a leaky gut. And I think it was Dr. Fasano that said every autoimmune disease basically has three components. There's a genetic component, there's underlying triggers, and then there's a leaky gut. So one of the big things, first of all, is to fix a leaky gut.
Yes, naturopaths are always focused on that, and that was sort of a byline of the great Dr. Bastier, who started Bastier University, which is in the U.S., and College of Naturopathic Medicine. So we're going to take a little break here, Dr. Carey, and we're going to continue when we come back with fascinating discussion with yourself, the functional medicine doc. I'd like to remind listeners they can find you anytime at www.drcarri.com. And this show, like all of our shows, will be archived at progressiveradionetwork.fm. So if you're listening to this show and you'd like to share it with someone, it will be there for you. And Dr. Carey, you can also download it to have on your site for other people that visit you directly. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
Okay. How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
Dr. Z, right here on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And you can join myself, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and Dr. Eugene Zamperone on ground. That means we give classes in person. Of course, we both have practices. Dr. Zamperone has a practice in Connecticut and also in the clinic at the University of Bridgeport Department of Naturopathic Medicine. And I have an office in Oyster Bay, New York, as well as Deerfield Beach, Florida, where people do come in to talk about their requirements in terms of what they'd like to use in natural health care. We also run a school in certification courses in natural health care. So you study for 5 hours for each certification that you would like to get. And then you do get a certificate, either in herbal medicine. And, boy, we have so many different students taking different classes. Right now I have classes going on in various kinds of herbal studies, such as outside herbal identification, gathering and making wild plants as well as garden-grown plants into your own medicine at home. I also have classes going on in radionics, which involves dowsing as well as the use of various kinds of machines that are called radionics machines. Many people are trying to learn to do that to enhance their home self-care. We also have one on aromatherapy and homeopathy. These are all different avenues of learning how to care for yourself and your family the natural alternatives way. And we have herb walks, where we go outside and identify wild plants. We have walks in Chinatown and eco tours for cures that even go to the island of Jamaica, where you get credit for attending a five-day seminar living with indigenous healers. So all kinds of things, and we love to have you on board. So you can go to naturalnurse.com and sign up for our free newsletter by just typing in your email in the bottom left-hand corner. And today we're so happy to have as our guest Dr. Carrie, how do you say your last name?
Drisga.
Dr. Drisga. And she's written a beautiful book called Reclaim Your Energy and Feel Normal Again, Fixing the Root Cause of Your Fatigue with Natural Treatments. Dr. Carrie is really the go-to expert on finding the root causes, which she's been sharing with us, of health problems, especially linked to people feeling fatigued and just like their brain and body are not really working very well. And she supports the revered naturopathic advice, find the cause, fix the cause, feel normal again. That's functional medicine. So thank you so much for joining us once again, Dr. Carrie.
Ellen, again, thank you. It's such an honor to be interviewed by you today.
Now, you did a wonderful job explaining in detail something that I'm sure you look into because people come to you saying they're tired. So you're looking at the thyroid. What other big avenue do you investigate?
Well, there's many different avenues that I investigate, and that's kind of a hard question to answer because really ultimately it depends on the patient that's in front of me. So everybody is unique and different, and because everything in your body really is connected, trying to find the root underlying cause of fatigue or any health problem takes time and it takes effort. But in my book, I outline 8 fatigue factors that I found, 8 of 14. And so depending on what the patient tells me during their history, depending on what they've checked off on their questionnaire and whatnot, depending on what their blood work looks like, sometimes I'll check for cortisol imbalance. So cortisol is the major stress hormone in the body. And for a lot of people, their fatigue starts after a very stressful period of time. So that could be something like the death of a loved one or a loved one falling ill. It could be going through a separation or a divorce. So if your fatigue or if your health problems started after a very stressful period of time, it could be a clue that your cortisol is out of balance. And then another thing that I look for is blood sugar imbalances, and this goes this has to do a lot with diet. So some people they're not eating very often or very regularly. They're like skipping breakfast because they're just too busy, or they're sitting at their desk and they're working and working and working, and then they just decide to skip over lunch. And doing these things can really create havoc with your blood sugar, with your glucose, and that can be a major cause of fatigue, especially brain fatigue, because your brain requires glucose for proper functioning. And then another thing that I'll check for is just simple nutrient deficiencies. So, Ellen, even though most of my patients come to see me and they've already been to see their family doctor, or they've already been to see a specialist, an internist, an endocrinologist, a gastroenterologist, I'll always gather all of their records to see what tests have already been run. And oftentimes what I have to do is I have to fill in the blanks. So we had talked earlier about the thyroid and filling in the blanks with the thyroid, but when it comes to nutrient deficiencies, I find that often people are deficient in B12, they're deficient in iron, they're deficient in zinc, and the other big one is vitamin D. And especially in Canada, these things are not routinely checked.
Well, that's incredible. Doctors. I mean, they have to turn around at least on vitamin D. It seems like even conventional doctors are recognizing the importance of that. And in Canada, I would have to guess almost everyone is low. You guys don't get that much sun.
Yeah, you're right. There was some major research that came out of the University of Calgary, I think it was the University of Calgary, saying that basically upwards of 92 to 96% of Canadians were deficient in vitamin D. But this is what happens, Ellen, because the healthcare system is run by the government, and the government only has, you know, a set-aside budget. The vitamin D test is considered more of an expensive test because it generally costs about $40 to run. And so to run that on every person in Canada, you know, from the bookkeeping standpoint of the budget, that really puts a big strain on the budget. So I don't know who made this wise decision to just say, we're not paying for vitamin D testing anymore in Canada. If you want to have your vitamin D tested, you have to do it yourself.
Wow.
Because the truth is, if everybody had their vitamin D tested and then started treating themselves with vitamin D to get their vitamin D levels into the ideal ranges, that in and of itself, I'm certain, would save the healthcare system so much money, just because there would be less people sick, less people having cancer, less people having chronic pain, less people having all kinds of different health problems. And that's just vitamin D.
Yeah, so people have to pay for it themselves. Or how about if you didn't test it and just do, you know, let's say use a supplement?
So what I find in Canada is most people are told by their doctor, you don't need a vitamin D test. Chances are you're deficient. And that's, you know, that is right. And then the doctor will say, you know, you just need to supplement with 1,000 units of vitamin D every day and you'll be fine. But the problem is, so me personally as a functional medicine doctor, I would not even supplement 1,000 units to a newborn. I would give a newborn 2,000 units, let alone an adult. So oftentimes, patients come to see me, they're already taking 1,000 to 2,000 units of vitamin D, and they're still deficient. So you don't know unless you get tested.
Right. I just think I really am a big campaigner in terms of having universal nutrient testing, both in the United States, certainly where I am. There's no regular testing of nutrient levels that are done, except perhaps something like ferritin with anemia, very little, if any.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that would be a brilliant idea to do universal testing of just simple nutrients within North America. I think that would be a brilliant idea, and there would be a lot more healthy people walking around out there.
For minor cost, almost zero cost, when you look at the cost of nutrients versus the fancy pharmaceuticals.
That's right.
So you, of course, do that in your test. And what do you find with vitamin D? Is that one of the nutrient triggers that you think is linked to fatigue?
You know, absolutely. So as you know, and a lot of your listeners probably already know, vitamin D is known as the sunshine vitamin. And certainly in Canada, you're right, we do not get enough sunshine. But you could even be living down in Miami and still be deficient in vitamin D. So, again, you should get it checked. But, you know, if you think about just simply if your vitamin D levels are low, I like to explain this to patients that it's like your body is in hibernation mode. You know, it's like how you feel during the wintertime. Kind of everything slows down. You just want to curl up and just eat, you know, comfort foods all winter long. You're a little bit more sluggish. You gain a few more pounds during the wintertime. And then all it takes is one sunshiny day, like bright blue sky and sunshine. And it could be, you know, it could be below zero outside, but just having the sun, you know how that makes you feel, Ellen. It just makes you feel so much more alive, and it just gives you so much more energy. So, yeah, you're right. Vitamin D can help with fatigue and just can help with making people feel more alive. And actually, I found it, too, it can help with a little bit of weight loss as well, because it's bringing your body out of hibernation mode.
Right, and have more energy as well to do more exercise.
Yeah, that too.
Which is always so important. Now, besides vitamin D, what other are among the four most common nutrient deficiencies that you find is linked to low energy?
Well, I guess the next one that I often find is B12. So a lot of times people have already had their B12 tested. And, Ellen, the problem with the lab testing is that what's considered the normal range of B12 is very, very broad. It goes from I think 125 or 150 on the low end, up to maybe 600 on the high end. And so what I often find is that people will come in and their levels are like in the 200s. So they're on the low end of that normal range. And what research has shown is that really the best levels for vitamin B12 to have ideal health would be above 600. So if you do have a copy of your blood work, look at your B12, and if your number is not at 600 or higher, you need to take a B12 supplement. And B12 deficiency or insufficiency is a huge cause of fatigue and also poor memory and brain fog. It can have an effect on all areas of your body, including it can cause chronic pain. So I have found that B12, along with vitamin D, are two of the most common deficiencies that I see in my office.
Now, a lot of people consider B12 that it would often be low in people who are strict vegetarians or vegans, but actually you're seeing it in people who eat more of a normalized diet as well.
Exactly. So you bring up a great point, Ellen. So B12, the best food sources of B12 happen to be animal sources. So I think at the top of the list is clams and other mollusks, shellfish, organ meats, liver, beef, lamb, red meats. And so because most vegans and vegetarians are not eating those foods, they particularly have to watch their B12 levels. But you're right, the average Joe eating a standard Canadian diet or a standard American diet, even they are frequently deficient or insufficient in B12, and they need to take a supplement.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily absorbed the same way as a food source, but it's better than nothing.
But it's better than nothing. So what I like to do in my office when I find B12 is a problem, I'll put my patient on a B12 supplement. So here's one thing is that B12, the best kind of a supplement to take is the kind that melts under your tongue, because B12 will get absorbed better in your mouth than it will in your stomach.
Well, what about considering injections?
Oh, that's a good question, too. So the other option is you could do B12 shots. That's painful and it's costly. And the research on B12 injections versus a B12 that is sublingual or melts under your tongue, it shows that they work about the same. So most of the time I'll just have patients on a sublingual or a little tablet that melts under the tongue because it's cheap, it's easy, and it's painless compared to the shot.
Okay.
Yeah. And so what I'll do is I'll put them on B12 and I'll give them a list of here's the foods that are the best sources of B12 in your diet. I want you eating more of these foods. So we'll do that for about 4 to 6 months. Then I'll retest their blood to see where their B12 level is now. And usually at that point it's above 600, which is great. And then I'll say, you know what, at this point we have the option of taking the B12 supplement out and just seeing, can you maintain your B12 level now with your diet alone? Because the reality is, Ellen, is your food really is your best medicine. And ideally, I want my patients getting all their nutrients from their diet.
That is excellent. And it's really my philosophy as well. Not sending people home with 100 bottles, but yet we use the natural nutritional supplements as medicine in a targeted fashion for the individual, but also looking at changing the diet and lifestyle to be able to support health and wellness on a long term. So that's exactly perfect. We do need to take one more break right here, and this is for station identification. And you can hear more about a lot of the wonderful shows that are available to you right here on Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Dr. Carey. Meanwhile, you could visit her website and see all the information you can find for yourself right there at www.drcarri.com. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And welcome back once more to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. We love to hear from you. Go ahead and visit us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. You can ask a question or let us know what you'd like to hear about or things you don't like. We like to hear those too, constructive criticism. And we love to bring you information about how you can take care of yourself, your health, and your family the natural alternative way. Our guest today also has tons of information for you on exactly that topic in her book, and that is available, I guess, online as well as perhaps on Amazon, but it's called Reclaim Your Energy and Feel Normal Again, Fixing the Root Cause of Your Fatigue with Natural Treatments. It is quite comprehensive. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Carey.
Thank you for having me on, Ellen. And yes, you can get my book at Amazon in paperback or Kindle forms, and you can also get it at my website at drcarey.com.
So it's not a hard thing to find. It's really well written in terms of protocol management. Now, one thing we did not talk about at all, and believe it or not, we're in our last segment here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Tell us about your program, Entrepreneurial Fatigue, How to Fuel Your Brain and Body for Entrepreneurial Success, because this is not like dragging at the bottom. This is kind of like shooting for the stars.
Yeah, so what I was finding, Ellen, I have a podcast that I do, and it's called The Functional Medicine Radio Show, and as I've been out there promoting my book, what I was noticing was that a lot of the entrepreneurial internet radio shows that I was being interviewed on, that a lot of the entrepreneurs were also suffering with fatigue. And what I found is most of the fatigue that we have is actually brain-based fatigue, and that it can happen to entrepreneurs if they're, you know, if they're starting up their business and they're the chief cook and bottle washer. But it can even happen to a lot of entrepreneurs when they're at the top of their game, that they just, their brain starts to fail them and they just get tired and they're have poor memory and poor concentration and motivation. And so that's why I put together the course to try and give entrepreneurs, and really, honestly, Ellen, everything in my course would apply to anybody, even if they're not an entrepreneur, on how to build better brain health.
So that's a good idea. How would you even determine that that the fatigue is related to brain health?
So some of that would come from the history. So I know for me, when I decided to go back to school to become a naturopath, now I was at that point 15 years into practice, and that meant moving from Canada back to Chicago for a couple of years, and I took a crazy schedule. I was in class like 30 hours a week, plus studying for exams and writing term papers and whatnot. And Ellen, I was flying back and forth to Canada to try and maintain my private practice. So I was literally burning the candle at both ends, and that's when the fatigue hit me. And I knew it was because of all the stress I was putting my body under. And once I graduated and I passed my boards and I was back in practice, I mistakenly thought, well, all I really need is some time to rest, and I'll just bounce right back, and that did not happen. And I fixed my adrenals, and I fixed a parasite infection that I had. I went on a gluten-free diet, but really it wasn't until I directly addressed my brain that my energy finally started to soar again. So if you're story is similar to mine, where you've gone through a tremendous amount of stress, whether it's like what I did, going back to school or getting a different job, or going through, like I said earlier, tremendous financial stress or mental emotional stress of going through the death of a loved one or the illness of a loved one, or through a separation or divorce. Like, those huge stresses will always have an effect on the brain. And so working on the brain directly, that's one of the clues that I know that that's part of the underlying cause of fixing the patient's fatigue, is looking for those little clues.
So what are the little clues that you would be looking for if your patient describes some of these problems?
So as far as taking their history, so like I said, it would be looking for clues like that, like when did this all start? And then I'll also start kind of going through the list of the different brain chemicals to see if there's any imbalances there. So so one of the brain chemicals is acetylcholine. And one of the common, some of the common signs of acetylcholine deficiency are poor memory, forgetting things, you know, walking into a room and forgetting, like, why you walked in, picking up your cell phone and forgetting why, you know, who you wanted to call, things like that. So poor memory is a big sign of acetylcholine deficiency. And
it sounds like kind of like a normal senior moments for people getting older. Right?
That's exactly what it is. It's like the typical senior moment, but Ellen, frankly, this is happening in 20-year-olds, it's happening in 30-year-olds, and these are all very classic symptoms of acetylcholine deficiency. And so I could have clues like that that kind of lead me in the direction of the brain.
Okay, so that's good. And then what would you put together as a protocol?
So part of treating something like a brain imbalance, so some of that goes straight back to diet. So we were talking earlier about fueling your body, making sure that you have a stable blood sugar throughout your day. That in and of itself is going to help your brain. So stop skipping breakfast, stop skipping lunch, make sure you're eating 3 meals a day. Some people even need 2 snacks. Make sure
think the best way to address that for a busy lifestyle, which I certainly have, is bring your food with you. I only get to cook once or twice a week, and I actually make little to-go bags in the fridge. They're in glass containers with a snap on top, plus things like rice cakes, snacks. I actually bring a bottle of organic peanut butter with me, or if it's on the plane, a little container of it, so it's high protein, easy to grab anywhere, because busy people don't usually have like an hour per meal to take off during the day, which is why meals get skipped.
You're right. And you bring up an important point that I think a lot of people out there, they know they should be eating healthier, but what they need to do is start getting into the habit of starting to plan ahead. Just like you said, plan ahead, prepare things ahead of time, have things portioned out, and that will help make your job easier and make it easier for you to kind of stay on track with your diet. Because like we said earlier, your food is your best medicine.
That's really right. So planning is, you know, like you're the doctor, you can give people this information, but it's really a lot about guidance in self-care.
It is. In fact, the majority of it, I like to tell patients when they come to see me that, you know, for the most part, the patients that come to see me, they've already seen a bunch of doctors. They've already seen a bunch of naturopaths too. And so I'm seeing like really tough cases. So I'll tell them, I think I can help you. I'm not saying that it's going to be easy. I'm not going to say that it's fast either, because it's going to take time. But the majority of the work that you're going to have to do is on your shoulders. It's not on my shoulders.
Right. But you're acting as a guidance person.
I'm there to guide them in the right direction, but they're the one that has to do the heavy lifting, as I like to say.
How prevalent do you think gluten sensitivity is? I know it's part of what you talk about.
I think gluten sensitivity is more common than we'll ever know. There is so much research out there right now, Ellen, on how bad gluten is for the for our health in general, and that gluten, the number one area of the body that gluten tends to attack is the brain and the nervous system. And the other thing is that what we found with gluten is that gluten really serves no nutritional purpose, that we are not built to digest gluten at all. So anytime we eat something that has gluten in it, so that would be anything that has wheat or barley or rye, those are the three biggest sources of gluten. So you're eating your sandwich, so the gluten that's in your bread, it will always create a certain amount of irritation in your body. So some people, they're going to have more irritation than others, and the gluten is going to create more irritation and chaos. And then you couple that with all the other things that we've been talking about today, like nutrient deficiencies or cortisol imbalances or thyroid imbalances, and it just, the health just starts to spiral out of control. But I really think that if you're out there listening and if you think that a gluten-free diet is like a fad diet, that you are just sorely mistaken, that there is just too much evidence right now that gluten is just not good for health.
Yeah, it's amazing because a lot of people go, oh, I thought bread was the staff of life. But believe it or not, we are at the end of our time. We do have to, you know, move on and allow the next wonderful Progressive Radio Network show to begin. So why don't you just remind us the best way to get in touch with you, Dr. Carrie?
Hi, Ellen. It's been a pleasure to be on. There's so much more I wish I could say, but for the listeners out there, the best place to find me would be at my website, drcarrie.com. And again, that's spelled drcarrie.com.
Well, thank you so much. And until next time, ciao.